In February of 2019, Larry Charles produced a docuseries on exploring comedy in various dangerous places around the world. While the written show description mentions him traveling to China and Russia and various other places, I'm going to say right here in the front that I only recall him going to a few countries in Africa, the Middle East, and the U.S., but whatever. Despite that, the four episodes did take a look at some of the interesting places and some interesting concepts. In this episode of Lessons from the Screen, we're going to be talking about Larry Charles's Dangerously Funny.
Lessons from the Screen, what we mean is we go through different documentaries to tell you what they gon' do. Give you our lessons, give them our blessings. If they trash, we tell you there is no second guessing. Knowledge is power, but time is precious. And we're here to keep you from them lessons. So sit back as we groove, giving you the review, so you only spend time on the docs that you need to.
So welcome back to another episode of Lessons from the Screen, the show where we give you a review of whether or not any particular information you can get from any particular screen of any particular kind is worth your time. We waste our time, our energy, and our brain power so that you don't have to. And you're welcome. And I am currently chewing on some very delicious Tic Tacs, but I'm all done now. Lessons from the Screen is sponsored by PAX Inc. That's PACTSINC, a black activist advocacy and think tank organization with the purpose of increasing the quality of life for black people in America through education, culture shift, and economics. You should definitely go ahead and check them out at www.pactsinc.org, PACTSINC.org. Check out the Learning Center, new books, chapters, things updated daily. Check out the Take Some Surveys, become a member, become a supporter, give a donation, tell a friend to tell a friend. Make sure if you're an Amazon shopper, you shop through the Amazon Smile with PAX Inc. selected so that a portion of your purchases go to the organization. They're doing what they can to help you, so you should do what you can to help them. So we're going to jump right into this. It's four episodes, so we're going to give a brief overview of all four of them and then talk about this thing as a whole. Now, the first episode starts out in Iraq, the place that I think of last when I think of stand-up. So it was interesting that that's the first place he went. And rightfully so. Well, I don't know if that's the first place he went, but that's where the film starts, in episode one. But according to this film, you know, it's still not quite there yet. Comedy, stand-up comedy especially. Although American culture still has its imperial and colonial roots, and that's something that was actually mentioned in the documentary, Western culture is included in that, because American culture is part of Western culture. Anyways, comedy is slowly, American-style comedy or Western-style comedy is slowly starting to invade those cultures, even in the Middle East that hate our guts. But what was most interesting at that point of the show was the fact that the comedians were openly talking negatively about ISIS and their governments. And this is something that's hit on time and time again every time they go to the Middle East. The fact that people are making regular jokes about ISIS and their governments is something that for us in America, we just, because we're constantly told about how strict and how hard and how easy it is to be murder, death, killed, or maimed, or whatever, mutilated, or whatever the case might be, you just don't think about them being very free, open, and honest, especially when it comes to making jokes about ISIS and their governments. But there they were. Now, that's not to say there wasn't some retaliation in one instance where that they showed on the film anyways, where someone was killed the same day that they made a anti-ISIS joke. But they're doing it. So even if the stand-up thing it's like, oh, well, of course they have stand-up in Iraq. Even if that's your thinking, I still found it fascinating that they were willing to talk trash about ISIS. So, you know, it's crazy. It is crazy. Because, again, this is something that we here in America have been told will get you killed, just as sure as jumping into a 30-foot pool with a 300-pound vest. But these comedians, in that sense, almost seem like freedom fighters. And from there, you could really see the power of comedy to shift power and change moves. Now, then it moved from the Middle East to Liberia, where it got most of the things wrong, or at least contextually, things were painted very wrongly in terms of the founding of the country. It speaks about how the country was founded by free slaves as a haven, and then they went there and then they enslaved the indigenous Liberians, and that's not exactly what happened. Now, I'm not going to get into what happened. I think you should research that, but I will say there's a lot of context missing. Yes, they did come over, but Liberia was not created specifically and exclusively by freed slaves. That, like, where would they have the resources to even get to Liberia? Where would they have the resources then to set up a government in Liberia? Now, that is, so, you know, there was this Negro problem going on back then, and Liberia was one of the potential solutions to what to do with the Negro. The question that white people were asking themselves in America. And of course, black people who had been enslaved in America, they had developed a lot of those they had inculcated a lot of the cultures of America. And so they had begun to be Europeanized, the same way we are today, where lighter is better, blah, 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 blah. But anyways, like I said, I'm not going to get into that. But I think his short synopsis of what happened to create Liberia was just dangerously inaccurate. So I had to point that out. But according to the documentary, when we go into Liberia, he talked about the long-running violent civil war. He continued talking about how elections was such a big deal because people died for the right to vote, which that's something that I personally disagree with. I think people died for the right to have a political voice and to have political power and to self-actualize politically. I don't think anybody died for the right to cast a ballot. But that's split in hairs. I understand that. But death seems to be something that has touched everyone that he interviewed in Liberia very personally. They all have a story about a family member or a close friend that died in their arms, they died somewhere close to them. They see poverty on a daily basis of the likes that we just don't see here in America. So that was something that touched me. But that also got me to think there were a lot of social cues here with discussions and jokes about corruption, about disease, and about extreme violence. One of the interviews you could see. Now, and this is, again, what kind of got me thinking about something that I'm going to mention earlier, which is the implicit bias of Larry Charles doing these interviews. But during one of the interviews, you could see what looked to be a man and a woman arguing in the streets, but you could also see other people coming to break it up. Now, this was interesting to me because he had someone in the car, I believe, that he was trying to interview. And you could see the camera, even though it didn't follow closely, and maybe my memory's flawed, but you could see the camera kind of follow along with what's happening behind. And this happened at least twice in the documentary, where they're in an African country and something is going on that is outside of the interview, and the camera will redirect from the interview and the comedian and redirect to the thing that's happening in the background that's negative. They never redirect it towards anything good. They redirect it towards negative things that literally had absolutely nothing to do with what was going on. Now, the comedians here, they seem very willing to talk, and some of them even brought comedy into their interviews, such as the English-speaking comedian in Liberia that had a woman translate one of the questions from English to English form, which I thought that was pretty funny. Now, they found an interesting way to turn sadness into happiness. And this is really nothing new. I guess it's new for white people who haven't experienced any level of mass poverty or mass hardships the way other people have. I guess it's new to think that people could laugh through tragedy. But it's for those people that have gone through real tragedies, especially when you've gone through them as a group, the tragedy itself becomes a bonding experience that you can laugh over, that you can cry over, that it becomes a part of your cultural identity that becomes celebrated, that you made it through the trials and you can joke about the oppression and you can laugh to keep from crying about it. And there's growth, there's healing, there's bonding in all of that. And that was something that was present in the documentary everywhere it went, but it wasn't something that was explicitly said either by the comedians or by him. He just constantly spoke about how amazing it was that these people could laugh in the middle of everything they had going on. Now, they found one of the most famous social media sketch artists, and he talked about how the inspiration for one of his characters was the fact that American doctors didn't want to come to Liberia during the Ebola outbreak. He had this character called Angel, the Angel something. I believe it was the Angel Michael or something or another. In any case, the God in the sketch, God is sending all of the angels to different places. And he looks at him and he sends him to Liberia and he tells God, "I don't want to go there. Send me anywhere but there." And blah. So that's the sketch, and it became an ongoing character. Thought it was pretty funny, but I also thought it was really telling about how observant they were that the American doctors did not want to come to their country, did not want to treat them, because for all of the good that they wanted to do, they were terrified of Liberia. The violence, the perceived violence, the potential for outbreak because of the various factors that are present in the country. So it was just interesting for me to hear him make that joke, make those references, and to be very much aware of how the rest of the world looks at his country. Thought that was very telling, because especially living in America, because in America, we really don't know what other people feel about us. Like, we're not that internationally aware. We think we the shit. We think everybody else think we the shit. And when we find out that there are other people that don't like us, we either try to rationalize it away, or we call it an outright lie, or we just dismiss it. But we never try to dig to find out why another country, another group of people might look at us in our culture that way. And that's probably the fact that we never think to ask why is probably one of the reasons why they feel the way they feel. Various people feel the way they feel. But so it's always interesting for me to hear other people talk about how their country is perceived and about how they perceived other countries in their dealings with them. So that was interesting and fascinating to me, and another example of how you could turn something as tragic as Ebola into a joke. So they found just as many female comedians as male comedians in Liberia, and their stories were even darker, but their smiles were even brighter. Of course, he took the time to interview General Butt Naked, who is an infamous warlord and not a comedian in any way, shape, form, or fashion. And for those of you that don't know, General Butt Naked is one of the former child soldiers from the, I believe it was from the first Liberian Civil War. And he became famous because he was on the news butt naked. He would do his pre-war rituals butt naked. And he got filmed one day and he became General Butt Naked. But he's one of the most infamous warlords and murderers and well-recognized child soldiers of that era. And he's interviewing this guy who, again, is not a comedian. And he's I believe he's a pastor at this point. But in any case, it came off as more propaganda and negativity towards Liberia than was necessary. And it wasn't that General Butt Naked was threatening or aggressive, but he just isn't a comedian. And one of the first questions that Larry Charles asked him was, what does human flesh taste like? Like, what the hell kind of, like, what it, like, I'm cool with you asking that question if you are curious. But why is it in your documentary? Like, that's film footage that could have been cut and left on the floor. So, now, the funny part about that for me, and he did ask General Butt Naked, because he's not a kid, he's a grown-ass man at this point. But he did ask him what some of his favorite shows were growing up. And I thought that it was so funny that he said that one of his favorite shows as a kid was a show called Combat. And his dad told him that he was going to be like one of the stars, one of the main stars of the show, which was a white military man. And I thought that was funny because I guess his dad was pretty accurate in that, because he terrified his people in the same way that white military men terrified his people, in the same way that white military men terrify everybody. You know, so in that, he very much became he became a pretty accurate representation of a white soldier from the lens of how they're viewed by other people, especially in non-white communities. And that's even here in America. So I thought that was interesting of the first episode. All in all, I thought the first episode was decent. I felt like when he got to Liberia, he was patronizing. He was condescending. And it's a theme that carried on throughout the entire series for me. Now, what was interesting about episode 2 was that it focused on military comedy, which for me is interesting because I'm a veteran and a veteran. And I wondered if real military culture would show or not. And initially, it started out above board and honorable, and that's, you know, the typical military image. But it didn't take long for the immaturity, the hypermasculinity, the sadistic nature of the American military to be shown. And I'm not talking about skits making light of death. That's completely normal in an environment where death is a constant threat, even when you aren't deployed. And that's something, you know, that see all over the world from people that aren't even military. But I'm talking about one former soldier saying that he made a parody of a woman soldier because he was angry that women had been let into the military. That's infantile at best. It's a temper tantrum on display and supported by the hundreds of thousands to millions of military and civilian personnel that supported and shared the videos. And throughout that section on American veteran comedy, you saw two sides. The public face, which is above board and honorable, and you saw the private face, which is a cesspool of toxic behavior filled with intolerance, immaturity, brutality, and stupidity. And as you could tell, I feel some type of way about military culture because that's a lot to get into there. And that might be a show for another day as well as the other one that I mentioned. But there's a lot to dig into there. But I mean, the fact of the matter is, you got a bunch of young 18-year-old kids fresh out of high school, don't know shit, but think they know everything, that don't really give a damn about anybody, and they're the most intolerant, the most overconfident, the most egotistical people you've ever met. And most of them are signing up either because they had to or because they want to fuck some shit up. And that's in their own words when I was in the military. So basically, you have an environment that's created to generate piece of shit individuals. And I know there are exceptions to every rule, and some people are going to say, well, blah, 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 it's not really like that. No, look, from my experience, and I was in the Air Force, so I can only imagine how it was in other branches. But from my experience, most of the people I met in the Air Force were pieces of shit. Bigoted, intolerant, racist, just not well put together emotionally or mentally people. Now, I did meet a lot of people that were wonderful human beings, and those people I still follow. I still, you know, I don't talk to anybody from my military days with the exception of one person, but I still follow them on social media when I choose to log in every 6 to 8 months. You know, so I still do what I can with them, and those people, they know who they are because I haven't told them that they're pieces of shit. I'm not that type of person. If I think you're a piece of shit, I'm going to tell you that I think you're a piece of shit. So if I haven't told you that I think you're a piece of shit, then I don't think you're a piece of shit. But there are most of the people from my military days, we've had that conversation. Yo, bro, you're a piece of shit. And that's just what it is. You're a horrible person. But again, that's a show for another day, for a totally whole other day. So, but after they finished allowing the immaturity of the military to be put on display, they left America and went back to Liberia to talk to former child soldiers there. Now, this is where you would expect to see General Butt Naked, but you did not see General Butt Naked in this section. And this is kind of like crazy because it's like this section was focused on military people and people that fought in war. Why wouldn't you have General Butt Naked interview here? So the Liberian peace was again disheartening. He found a former child. He found a group of former child soldiers who were strung out on drugs, performing for each other in an abandoned cemetery. And maybe it was just my perspective, but he seemed to be again patronizing them. But the emotionality of the scenes was apparent and powerful, especially mixing the comedy routine of one former child soldier with actual footage from the war that made it look like he may have actually been acting out real live activities. So it was a performance, but it was also a reenactment, if you will. And it wasn't necessarily a positive reenactment, and it didn't necessarily elicit positive feelings, but it did make me feel some type of way about what I was watching, because this was a young man who was a former child soldier and who was clearly struggling, even broke down crying during the interview. And he was doing what he could do to feed himself and make ends meet. You can't knock him for that. From there, we went back to the Middle East to talk to soldiers about things they found funny. But most of the conversation was focused on a captured ISIS person who said that he was tricked into joining ISIS and forced to do things. And he, you know, Larry Charles proceeded to ask questions like, did people have a sense of humor in your village growing up? And what was your favorite TV shows? All good conversation questions, I guess, but, you know, the guy seemed to be getting frustrated with the questions because he responded to the last one by saying, is there such a person that doesn't like to have fun? Everyone likes to have fun. And so that kind of summed up me watching him question people in his interviews, is because it didn't seem to me like he was getting at the core of the of their comedy and how they were finding ways to make light of their situation in those moments and, you know, addressing it from the various different cultural perspectives. Now, there were some people that I felt like he did a good job in doing that with, especially when he talked about race, which is the very next episode, episode 3. But for the most part, it was kind of whatever, you know. And after they spoke to the man, the ISIS person, they moved to Somalia, where the conversation shifted from soldiers and combatants to comedians in dangerous places, which was essentially the first episode all over again. So episode 3 was focused on race, and it started out with a black woman telling her comedy about being shot twice and hit by a dump truck. And so, yes, and some of the horrible things that happened in her life. And then it moved on to talk about a young kid that I'm not going to say his name. The woman's name was Miss Pat, I believe. But this kid who just does stupid shit with no message, no reason, no purpose, except to get likes. And what was interesting here was Larry Charles did what a lot of people try to do, especially liberals. He tried to create some sort of meaning for the pranks. And the kid repeatedly said he didn't think about none of that stuff. He repeatedly said he didn't think at all. He just did it. So all of that intelligent, relevant, positive, and it did kind of bother me. Because I was thinking, of all the intelligent, relevant, positive comedy out there that speak directly to race in America, he didn't really speak to any of them. Ms. Pat, who is one of the comedians, the woman I spoke of earlier, she tells her story and she's funny. I'm not taking nothing away from her. Even in the clips, she was funny. I went and tried to look her up because she it was funny. And it really doesn't do too much harm to anyone. But the other person he interviewed, the man, was an idiot in a way that needs to be addressed because it was dangerous. His form of funny was to steal shit and record it with no larger narrative or message behind it. He would just go into a place, say his little catchphrase, and then run out of the place holding whatever it was he was holding. And then you come to find out he got his name from his mom, who gave him the nickname because he was always stealing. So here is somebody who's gotten famous and developed a huge following by being a thief. As a young black male looking the way that makes white people nervous and that makes black people nervous and that have you side-eyeing these people anyways. But beyond that, even without all of the tattoos and all of the grills and all of that other stuff, any black person that walks into a store that's a young black male, myself, when I was a young black male, I didn't dress like that. I didn't look like that, but I still got the same looks that everybody else got. So when I see stuff like this and I'm like, yo, there's nothing dangerous. Like, he's not being forced into dangerous situations. He's being an idiot and asking for trouble. And when trouble finds him, we're all going to be feeling some type of way about that and wanting to protest this, that, and the third. And it's going to be another one of those moments where I call bullshit. And I'm not saying he can't do what he does. I just think there are other ways to do it. Put a message behind it. You can't do those types of things without having some larger message behind it to pass on to your audience. If you just filming yourself stealing and you ain't putting any thought into it, you're stealing breast implants. Like, what the hell? Like, that, you know what I'm saying? Just stupid stuff. So I thought that giving that kid exposure hurt the image of the community. It puts young black males all over the community in danger. More danger, because we're already in danger. They're already killing them. It's just dangerous and irresponsible. And I'm trying not to really get into that because that's another show that I could do, just tearing that whole thing apart. But it really bothered me that was being broadcast because there was no good in it. There was really no purpose for it. It came off as negative propaganda. Look at these niggas. This is what they find funny. And no disrespect to Ms. Pat, but even her piece on, she grew up in the hood, grew up in a bad environment, got shot twice, hit by a dump truck. When she said some real shit, when he asked her, what does America get wrong about black culture? And she said everything. Everything. It seemed to me like she had some more stuff behind that, but it got cut off. Maybe I'm wrong. But it seemed like they only used the pieces that didn't have any meaningful social or cultural or political or educational or economic context behind it, messaging behind it. And that was something that they only seemed to do when they were interviewing black people. So, you know, again, maybe my perspective is skewed, maybe my perspective is off. But, you know, and I can't say, you know, because Trevor Noah was in there, and Trevor Noah is good at what he does, and his piece was pretty decent. He didn't have a long skit or a long section. He had, I want to say maybe it was like 5 or 10 minutes, but his assistant stopped and told, you know, cut the interview short. He only had 30 minutes to do the interview. And so that was, you know, it kept it brief, but his piece was good. But it didn't really talk about comedy either, or about, you know, the roots of his comedy. It kind of spoke on his view as an immigrant and somebody that's mixed. It spoke to his view of what was happening in America. Cool, but not really what the show was advertised for being about. From there, he moved to white supremacy, and they spent almost all their time blasting the Jews, probably because he told them he was one, or they knew he was one, or I don't know. The Native American piece was interesting, because it's always interesting for me personally to hear about the Native American experience and how they view the world, especially their thoughts on headdresses that are so common in American culture and at various non-Indian events and cultures in America. And what's interesting about that is a lot of people don't know that their headdress is kind of like their symbol of warrior status. People that have been to war, people that are trained, you know, people like they're veterans. So one of the Indian comedians, the Native American comedians, made it a point of saying how disgusted they were when they saw people walking around in their headdresses, because they didn't know what they meant. So, you know, I'm always interested to hear about that, because I do agree with the Indians, the Native Americans, when they said they feel invisible. Like nobody really pays attention to them. People kind of appropriate their culture the same way they appropriate black culture. But whereas black people have a bit more of a voice, the Native Americans don't really have much of a platform. Now, I'm not getting into this whole show of comparing blacks to Native Americans and blah, blah, blah platform and what happened and who got what and reparations and all of that. I'm not. I personally just find it interesting listening to them talk about their culture and how they view the rest of the world. I think it's informative. I think it's interesting. They did also analyze comedy from the Native American lens, which also made it interesting. Now, he seemed like he really cared in a way that wasn't really apparent for any of the other culture groups that he had talked to. Now, he did cite on the film that Native American women were 2.5 times more likely to experience sexual assault than any other woman in America. I couldn't find that stat. And I went to Amnesty International looking for it. I couldn't find it. But I did find a bunch of different groups and organizations that place black women as the most likely woman to be assaulted in America. And even to that, there are a lot of groups that don't actually track the stats of Native Americans. They're listed as other. But all that being said, I couldn't find that. But the transition to undocumented immigrants was an interesting one because of where we are right now as a nation, especially with the opening interviewee saying that he was wrong for telling people to trust the government. But he only really touched it with one interview. Now, episode 4 focuses on gender and opens up in Saudi Arabia. And the women spoke about their comedy and the things they deal with. But the most interesting piece to me was the woman speaking about how her veil liberates her. She felt like the dress code complete with the veil took some of the pressure off of conforming. And She was also interested. What was also interesting, I'm sorry, was that as the interviewer was doing his audio overlay, the first thing that came out of his mouth was that she may be rationalizing. He did follow that up with another question of culture views held by the West. But for me, it's something that I talk about all the time. Cultural relativism, you know, cultural relevancy, cultural lenses. Trying to view other people's cultures through their lens and not through your own will give you a better understanding of what these who these people are and why they do what they do. And it increases the chances of you actually being on good terms with those people. If you come into a situation where you're viewing another culture through your own cultural lens, then you're going to miss the mark on a very great amount of things, on a lot of things. Because there are things that might be acceptable in their culture that's not acceptable in yours, and vice versa. So I always thought that was interesting. In America, we have a bad case of viewing the entire world through our cultural lens as if they're all trying to be Americans. And, you know, we believe it's our way. Our way is the right way. Our way is, you know, it's either our way or the highway. But because we don't cover up, we attack cultures that force people to, that we view as forcing people to. And oftentimes we're not really concerned with how the indigenous people feel. Like, you saw, going back to the veil, we saw all of these stories and all of these things about American women and American men protesting and marching and demanding that the women in Saudi Arabia or in Iraq or in various other countries, demanding that they be free to unveil themselves. And you talk to a lot of people, and because I did at the time, and a lot of them didn't know what the veil meant, and they didn't know if they were legally required to wear the veils or not. They just knew that they saw pictures of women in veils, and they felt like it was wrong, so they started protesting. Now, that's not to say everybody was like that, but my thing is, it's just an example of how we get caught up in our own cultural lenses, and we're not looking at the scenario in the best way possible. Now, I'm not saying that women should be forced to cover their faces. I'm not saying women should be forced not to. And I think we can all agree that whatever a woman chooses to do with her face is her choice. But it is interesting because a large portion, in my opinion, from my experience, a large portion of the passionate, energetic protesting crowd is severely uninformed, underinformed, and is looking at the problem through a cultural lens that is going to breed misunderstandings. So from there, he went back to the continent of Africa, stopping in on the country of Nigeria, which did bring us some interesting points of discussion. But it seemed to me like he was clearly biased again. Obviously, his goal in this documentary wasn't to be non-biased, but to expose people to funny in different cultures. And in any case, he hammered the male comics in Nigeria pretty hard for making jokes about rape and the cultural acceptance of rape, which, as a comedian, I expected him not to do, because we commonly hear comedians say everything is on the table as long as you do it in taste. And it's funny. So what I also thought was interesting with regards to this was the fact that the last show with the soldiers, there were inappropriate jokes all over the place that were not funny. And at no point in time did he really press the soldiers on those jokes the way he pressed the Nigerians on, say, their rape jokes. So, and I'm not excusing rape jokes or anything like that. I think me personally, a joke is a joke. I don't get bent out of shape about a joke. But the rape culture issue of it is a separate issue. And I do think that needs to be addressed. And that's all, you know, like that's what it is on that. But that being said, moving on. He did talk to women, just as many women as men. I think actually a couple more women than men, but I could be wrong. And with the women, he seemed once again to be pandering and patronizing. And like the other scenes in Africa, while the comedians were being interviewed or in between interviews, the camera was flashing on troubling situations happening in the background. And it's, you know, like I said, it wasn't done any other place outside of Nigeria and Liberia. So it seemed to me to be to betray his negative bias towards black culture, African culture, anything with black skin and groups. And I'm not calling him a racist. I'm not calling him any of those things, but I am saying that his implicit bias was showing from my perspective. Of course, I could be wrong. I could just be being sensitive. But let me say this. Just because you're being sensitive doesn't mean that you're wrong. And he finished up the series talking about homosexuality in Nigeria. Not so much comedy, homosexual comedians, even though all of the guys he interviewed were comedians. He didn't necessarily talk to them, in my opinion, in great detail about how their gender, their sexual preference, or their sexual orientation had affected their comedy, or how they used it, or anything like that. He didn't really, in my opinion, adequately dig in. And that's kind of the theme of the entire documentary, is him talking to people, but not really digging into what makes them tick or the comedy, and moving around so fast. Like, he didn't really even give anybody enough time to really dig into the questions. The military guys, they got ample time to do a lot of talking, and they were thorough. But everybody else, it seemed like, got the short end of the stick. So overall, I gave this documentary 2 out of 5 stars. I like the premise of it. I like where it was going. I like the exposure and things of that nature. But those moments were just too few and far in between for me. What I viewed as the negative implicit bias against black people, the pandering, the patronizing, the clear bias, all of that kind of got in the way of me enjoying just being exposed to comedy in different areas that are viewed as dangerous. But again, like I said also a few moments ago, I think he needed to give people more time to talk and tell their story. And with the military guys, there was really only 3 military guys that he talked to. And they all had, I want to say, at least 5 or 6 minutes to tell their story, which is pretty good amount of time. And like I said, 2 of them were actually, you know, there's a guy with like 3rd-degree burns on, I want to say, like 90% of his body or something like that. And not only was he cool, but the jokes that he was making about himself, they were actually funny jokes. You know, I had to give him that. And, you know, there were a couple other moments in there that I felt like was good. But all in all, and on the whole, when we're looking at the series as a whole, it had a couple bright spots in it. But to me, it didn't hold up the billing. It didn't dig into those deeper questions about how these people can do the things they do in the condition that they're in. It asked that question, but it asked it on a very shallow and superficial level, in my opinion. So we didn't get to the core of what these people believe, why they believe it, and what they really expect to come from their comedy. And again, some of those questions were asked to some people, but to me as a whole, the documentary was just shallow and superficial. So that's my score, man. 2 out of 5. But with that being said, this has been this episode of Lessons from the Screen. I want to thank you guys for listening. You can check out Larry Charles's Dangerously Funny on Netflix. And I will see you next week on the next episode of Lessons from the Screen.
Lessons from the Screen, what we mean is we go through different documentaries to tell you what they gon' do. Give you our lessons, give them our blessings. If they trash, we tell you there is no second guessing. Knowledge is power, but time is precious. And we're here to keep you from them lessons. So sit back as we groove, giving you the review, so you only spend time on the docs that you need to.
I want to thank you guys once again for tuning in to Lessons from the Screen. I also want to encourage you guys to head over to the website, www.freedomtrainnetwork.com. You can head over there to the website, gain access to all of the shows on the Freedom Train Network, including this one. You can access to old shows, new shows. You should also check out the Freedom Train app. You can find it in the Google Play Store. If you research Google Play or research Freedom Train Radio or Freedom Train Presents or Freedom Train Network, you'll find the app there and you'll see the Choo Choo Train. That is our trademark Choo Choo Train for the Freedom Train. You can get all of the shows right there on your cell phone. Notification whenever we drop anything, or maybe we just want to see a notification saying hi. So you should definitely go and get that app. And you should also take a listen to our live internet radio streams throughout the weekend. We're dropping lectures, we're dropping shows, we're dropping all kinds of interesting things on the weekends. So definitely take advantage of that. I want to thank you guys again for supporting us. And as always, we appreciate you. We'll see you next week. This is the Freedom Train Network Presents Lessons from the Screen.